It is time now for the Media Beat with David Tarachuk. Davis joins us, of course, on a Friday. We rebroadcast during the noontime hour also. And also on weekends, you can find David at robinhoodradio.com. And it's under On Demand, David Tarachuk, the Media Beat, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. He is also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And the hits just keep on coming. Good morning, David.
Good morning to you. Good Friday wishes to you. Passover wishes to you. And Mueller Report Digestion Day wishes to you, too.
You know, I got...
We're all digesting?
Yeah. Well, you know, I got home yesterday, and I put on the TV for about 30 minutes. And I went from Fox to CNN to MSNBC. Very quickly, they were all saying basically the same stuff, believe it or not. And I just sat there and I said, what did people expect of this report? Nancy Pelosi put basically impeachment off the table until the report came out. There was no collusion in this report. They couldn't prove collusion. And there's what came out of the report were 10 instances where the special prosecutor, whatever his title was, they found, hey, this might be obstruction of justice, and he made the right decision. He had no power at all to indict the president. So he basically is leaving it up to the Congress to investigate those 10 charges and see if they want to proceed on that action.
I guess there are two options that he's leaving people with. One is that Congress takes action now, or just conceivably, although this is a very long shot, the president could be prosecuted on charges arising from these particular points that the special counsel underlines, the 10 points you mentioned, once he's no longer president. But that's kind of unlikely. The ball is basically in Congress's court now. Yeah.
And also, there are an additional 6 investigations going on outside his office, the main one by the Southern District in New York. So, I mean, there is so much wired in here that for people to think that there was going to be just this cut and dry finish, it's never going to be that way with Donald Trump.
Right. Well, investigations, generally speaking, end up with a whole lot of evidence, which is laid out for you clearly. It was no part of his remit to recommend prosecution, especially not since the Justice Department has a longstanding, I was going to say tradition, I mean, that's not the best word for it, but it's not part of the Constitution, it's not written down clearly, but it is very much a working proposition that you cannot indict the President of the United States while he is the President of the United States. So given that constraint, it's no wonder that he decided that the best thing to do was just to lay out the evidence and hand it over to different authorities.
Now, what's also interesting last week was Brexit being extended. But the thing that I found great about last week in Brexit is, I don't know if you saw Stephen Colbert, went over to England and he did some videotaping. He was holding a big sign saying, "Blame Brexit on John Oliver."
Partisanship is everywhere, isn't it?
But John Oliver also had a great little segment on Brexit where they interviewed people on the street, and people who were in favor of Brexit considered that no matter what happens, they won, whether Brexit goes into effect or not. It was a very, very funny skit that John Oliver put on. But so now with this...
In a sense, it's true. I mean, I know that Brexiteers in some ways are like Trumpists. You know, every event is just confirmation of their own rightness. Quite apart from, you know, being able to excuse yourself and claim credit for things, it is generally, I mean, in one broader sense, Brexit voters, people, the narrow majority of the quite a rather small total of people who voted, incidentally, back in the 2016 referendum. Those people who voted for Brexit, in a sense, got absolutely what they wanted. The nature of that vote wasn't so much on the technicality or the detail of leaving Europe and how. It was more just a big slap in the face to the establishment of the United Kingdom and its long-lasting involvement in Europe, of course, but mainly a big slap in the face. It was the absolutely classic protest vote. You don't know what they were for, but you certainly knew what they were against.
You know, John Oliver had a very funny ending to that segment, because the final day that they have now to get the deal done is
Halloween.
You just can't write anything better than that. I was.
But here. So what? I didn't even know how to ask these questions. What is this new party that's being formed?
There are several. the British scene is almost unrecognizable these days. There's a party representing the extremes of Brexit. Nigel Farage, the leader of the United Kingdom Independence Party, who emerged as such
former leader, no?
Former leader and former party, in a way. but he's created a new party, and that is now leading in the polls. For polls for what, you may say?
Yeah, well, that was my next question.
People have been now being asked, how will you vote in the European elections? Because of Britain now being having its stay in Europe extended means that they're going to have to take part in the elections to the Parliament in Europe. And who's now leading the opinion polls that are polling about voting intentions in those elections? Well, it's Nigel Farage's new anti-European party. Go figure.
You can't.
The British political scene is even more confused than ours, I have to say.
And meanwhile, back in the...
Ours in the United States, it is.
I know. There was a song long, long, long ago that... I don't know if Marshall could ever find it, but I just always remember, meanwhile, back in the jungle... Meanwhile, back in the States. All right. So, meanwhile, Boris Johnson, Mr. Mop, you know, and what I think is
what a nice new haircut he has now. He's clearly fitting himself out for a new public life.
Right? No, it's so obvious. But this is what most people. This is what staggers me about life, the press, whatever. You know, you think about Boris Johnson with his mop and his hair and his bike and being the mayor of London, and you completely in
former
the same
mayor of London, another former yes.
Sorry about that, but in the same way that you don't spend a lot of time thinking that Bill Barr and Bob Mueller happen to be really good and old friends and their families worship together, you don't think that I mean, now you will, but that Boris Johnson went to school with this everybody came up. Everybody comes up.
Wait, what school did he go to? That is, generally speaking, still, despite all its efforts at modernization, a telling question in Great Britain, yes. And, of course, the unspoken question and the unspoken answer, which is always implicit anyway, there are many schools where you just don't even need to ask.
No, you wear a tie.
people just know. They sniff each other out.
They find each other and they... So now what's... Since Mrs. May... That sentence does not end. But I don't get any sense.
What next for Mrs. May? That's one of the great political questions of all. Yes.
But I don't get the sense that Mrs. May is in any huge hurry to step down.
No.
So.
Absolutely not.
Right. None. Zero.
She's promised, I think.
No, that was only if they passed the deal.
To step down in return for, exactly. for people voting for the plan that they don't want.
But they didn't, so she's not going to. You know, it's just, I have to say, for your birthday's sake, she does a really good job. I mean, you're not the same day, but you're the same sign. And so I completely understand, hey, you didn't vote for the deal that you didn't want. I'm not stepping down. So meanwhile, tell me again what Boris Johnson's trying to do. Somebody? I can't even follow it.
Well, it's definitely hard to follow. I'm not going to argue with that. Well, as you can see, I'm dumbstruck.
Sorry about that.
There is very little you can do by way of clear analysis of the British situation at the moment. Any more, I think, than you can really say anything analytically clear about the outcome of the Mueller investigation. Because you're just left with a whole lot of contradictory and mushy evidence for how things have been going. Are they any guide to how things will go? Not necessarily. And in Britain, there is looming behind us all the strong possibility of a general election, which will change the political landscape completely. Whether Labour would actually, the opposition party at the moment, would then win against the government party of the moment, the Conservatives of Theresa May, is not certain. But these are difficult projections to make. You would expect Labour to win, given the mess that the Conservatives are in, have gotten themselves in. But you can't guarantee that. Again, uncertainty rules.
You can't guarantee anything, but were Labour to win, were there to be a general election, and were Labour to win, that would be... sorry, I'm doing maths here. Wait, you'll hear the results in a second. That would be a really good... that would be huge for Bernie Sanders.
Well, you think so? Will they draw any real parallels?
Yes.
Oh gosh, this country is drawing parallels with Bernie Sanders and Corbyn, and they're similar in a lot of ways. They're also dissimilar in a lot of ways. But
absolutely.
Yes, it would open up. I think it would open up certain members of the American electorate who would who would also all of a sudden become more easily available to vote for Bernie Sanders.
And meanwhile, didn't Biden just announce, or did he? Separately. I'm saying this because
he didn't announce yet.
Are you sure?
Well, he hasn't announced it formally, but sure. I mean, the man's running as clearly as you can run
without actually doing it. All right. So
and carrying with him still that age question, which isn't quite the most serious question mark over Corbyn in Britain, but it's one of them. Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm curious that you should say that there's such a straight line of comparison to be made.
Well, I do straight lines while everybody else spends time in commercial breaks walking around the garden path. What it would do is it would remove an argument from the table. One can never predict outcomes.
To some people, yeah.
To some people, it's enough people. I'm not saying, I'm not talking about outcome. I'm just talking about, we don't have to talk about that anymore because X, Y, Z. It clinches what is otherwise, can't win. You can't, socialists can't win. It's, well, sorry, no. And then you can debate the fine.
I get where you're going. The very notion of socialism has perhaps got some of its foreignness and its its peculiar tang in this country of I don't know what it is exactly. I
don't either. It's just
opprobation.
Yeah.
It's, is where we stand with it. It's as if you can't be a socialist in the United States.
Which is asinine.
Would a socialist winning in Britain make much difference to that? Well, conceivably, I guess. I mean, I see what you mean. But I don't think it would make that much difference to people's voting intentions.
No. I'm just talking about you can't even call it a discussion, and the information, you can't use that word either. It's the daily bludgeoning. It would make a little space in the daily bludgeoning. That space would be filled by some other lunacy, but that at least you wouldn't have to hear that. Just because because the stupidest parallels are drawn all of the time. Now here is the result of my math, and I think this is thanks to Axios on April 17th, and Marshall knows that I'm completely unhinged about this. And it is 2020 presidential election, track every candidate's Q1 fundraising totals. And this is excluding Donald Trump. And by the way, they're good enough on Axios to break down what is actually raised, what are transfers from other funds, etc. But I would like you to guess, Dr. Tereshchuk, I would like you to guess how much money was spent on Democratic candidates in the first quarter. In the first quarter of that would be January 1st, 2019 to March 31st, 2019.
I'm gonna hazard a guess and say it was a lot.
Oh, that's safe. I'm looking for numbers.
I don't have a number for you, but I know you have, so spit it out from Axios. What is it?
Axios didn't do it. I had to do it on a calculator, so I've probably messed
it
up. Oh,
you did? Okay. So what's your total? What's your...
$203,715,000.
Of course, the campaign hasn't started.
It doesn't matter. I was telling Jill, last campaign we went through for president, when you included all the primaries and the general election, was the first $1 billion campaign. This one will very easily reach $2 billion by the time it's
done.
That's
excluding the $30 million for the president. Current president.
I know, but I'm just saying everything altogether, when you include everything, will be.
I'm
once
not
again
arguing
close
about that. What,
I,
what I'm saying, because my next question to Marshall is, okay, $203 million, because, you know, we're always trying to run this radio station here, and $203 million in one quarter. Where did that money come from? So even if you slice off, oh gosh, be really generous, dump out $150 million, which is way too much. You know, just say that that's money that was sloshing around there anyway. That's, and I'm being generous. That's $50 million out of people's pockets. That could go. I mean,
America remains the wonder of the world. People, particularly in every country that has anything remotely approaching democracy, are still in awe at the degree to which, with absolute straight faces, Americans can claim to be a democracy and yet acknowledge at the same time the extraordinary power, the overwhelming power of money. In this so-called democratic state, United States of ours.
I mean,
that is extraordinary. You're right.
It just breaks my mind.
That's the whole thing about this. This next presidential election is it's going to be decided. The next president of the United States will be decided by what really the independents do. Democrats are going to keep the 98% support of a Democratic candidate. Republicans, I think, are almost 90% behind the president. The big group of voters are going to be the independents. I don't break it down by young, black, Hispanic, but independent voters. And the three states that are going to make the difference are going to be Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. Those are the three states that will that are going to make. You can throw everything aside, all the things.
And once again, the power of the Electoral College will be a deciding kind of power.
Deciding kind of factor. Now there are some states that have done some interesting things. We have to see whether or not they're going to be considered legal. There are, I think, now six states that will not put a person's name on to run for president if there are not released tax returns. And there are now 19 states, David, that have signed on to the proposition that the winner of the popular vote will get their Electoral College votes. They need, I think it's six more states to sign on to get the majority needed for this to actually happen.
The majority needed where?
You need a total number of delegate counts for this to work, 270. Right now, they are, in the shortest way to get there, six or seven states short, you know, by states' electoral college votes.
But where does it have to go? Is it a state thing or is it a...
No, once you get enough states to sign on to this and say they want to do it, and once there's a majority, that 270 electoral college votes, you can change those rules.
Change them where?
In the House, in the Senate.
What are the chances that it happens?
Oh, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen before this election.
That's all I was.
But it is a telling factor of something that will happen in the future. Now, I happen to be a big believer in the Electoral College because the way it was founded was with every right. But it's no longer fair that South Dakota gets two senators and California gets two senators. It's just not fair.
I want to ask a question about that. We're going to run out of time. Not about the Senate thing, but what I want to ask about is: has anyone noticed in the press how everything other than New York and L.A. are being referred to happily in the Atlantic? In the you pick a paper, any paper, it's called flyover country now. Axios flyover country. I'm hearing it on flyover country.
It was always called that. It was always called that.
Yeah. But I think it's being left out of the equation even more than it ever was in the media.
Because
it seems to be,
there are 11-year-olds now.
Except for when it comes to Ohio, of course, in the early primaries. That suddenly we get interested again. And then thereafter, we forget about it. There is a preponderance of forgetfulness. And that's a shame because... even despite the innate imbalances that we've been talking about, not least of all in the Electoral College, there are an awful lot of people out there whose votes count.
Well, it's like I said, it's going to be very interesting that they call it flyover country because it never changes. When you go from North and South Dakota and down to Texas.
You are 60X years old and you know that. What I'm talking about is people who are calling it flyover country now. For you, it's like, yeah, we know
flyover country used to be a term basically talking about revenues, broadcasters going from coast to coast because revenues were on both coasts. That was the original term. Flyover meant basically East Coast, West Coast, and it wasn't East Coast, West Coast. It was basically New York and California.
New York and L.A.
That was it. Everything else was flyover. That's how it originated.
It's just that you've got an entire generation of youngins who don't understand how many different, let's just say, refugees you could settle in flyover country.
David, your flyover was the ocean.
Well, yes. I mean, and colleagues of mine, I remember David Frost would spend his life flying over that Atlantic, and it was as if there were only two nodal points in the world, New York and London. And for some people, that's still the case. But, of course, London's now finding its position in that duality diminished enormously by Brexit. Here it comes again, the Brexit factor. And, of course, you now have to factor in Frankfurt as well. London's banking business is draining away to some degree to Frankfurt. What were old time certainties are many of them changing now. And I think the flyover one in the United States is definitely up for review.
You think?
Well, I think that once again, when we join each other in a week, it will be a combination of the Benny Hill Show and a Saturday Night Live with what's going on in Europe and America.
I can almost imagine that.
Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, the Media Beat.
Thank you.